We started making a list of everything we wanted to talk to Brock Huard about. It's a long list. There's a lot going on up there. A lot of things to talk to him about.
Haven't had him in a while, you know?
You know, he's busy doing
that. Big time now.
He's busy doing that one-hour podcast every single week. It's very time-consuming, all right? Doing one hour of broadcasting every single week. You must be wiped after that, Brock. Whew!
Oh, it's exhausting. It's incredible. I had to sleep in today just to compensate. We tape on Tuesdays, and I'm barely making it.
One hour of working with Sock will do that to you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, 1 hour of working with Mike will do that. Of course, Brock is also our good friend from the Fox Sports college broadcast as well, college football analyst, and he joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. But previously, we know him from 710 ESPN in Seattle, and we always talk to him about all things Seattle. I'm going to put the Peterson news off to the side for a minute, even though I think that was initially the genesis for us wanting to get you on. And I want to talk to you about what you think is going to go down this weekend with Oregon, with Utah, with Oklahoma, with Baylor. I think most of us would agree that the only team that really controls their destiny this weekend is Georgia. If they win, the field is set. If that doesn't happen, how do you think it all plays out?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's why I think this weekend is just phenomenal for college football. I do think Utah is going to handle Oregon Friday night. That Utah team, I kind of said this from the beginning of the year, that both Oregon and Utah were built for this season. They were senior-laden teams, lots of experience in all the right spots. I think Tyler Huntley is an incredible college quarterback. That triumvirate from Florida that's finally graduated, it feels like they've been in Salt Lake for like 15 years. So you know, those guys on the offensive side are going to move on, and they got seven seniors, and I think six of those dudes are all going to be playing in the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. So they are built, and they were built for this season. I think Kyle Whittingham knew it from the beginning. I actually had them in their only loss of the year against USC, which was kind of fluky with some big plays down the field. So I do expect them to take care of business, and then I think you're presented with a really challenging question for that committee, especially if Oklahoma finds a way to win. And winners just win in the end. You know, that is, I've had Oklahoma three times in the month of November, and you know, in two of those it was down to the final plays of the game, and that group is just, you know, finds a way to call it championship November, and have not lost in the month of November in 5 years, and I guess now we're in December. So it'll probably be, I think, a really hard-fought game in that Big 12 championship. But that is not a job I envy. That's not a debate that's simple. I think it will test, you know, just the very fabric of that committee and what's most important to them. If it is Oklahoma and it is Utah, is it the entire strength of the season and the dominance that Utah has had? I believe they've outscored their opponents by 27 points since that USC loss. Oklahoma had a bunch of nail-biters, did not play complimentary football. Yet, you know, I think if they beat Baylor, you're talking about beating the number 7 team versus where Oregon sits. So I think that will be a very, very difficult conversation. I don't think it's going to be one decided by Paul Feinbaum's opinion this morning, and that is that the country doesn't want Utah. I think that committee wants the best football teams, and I, you know, if I had a vote, I would probably say Utah, just because if they finish and if they beat, you know, Oregon by 10, 14, 20 points, I think Utah has had such a dominant run over the last 2.5 months.
Would love to see Utah get in. I'm going to pull for Utah over Oregon and hope they get in, you know, for the Pac-12 and you know, for Utah. But you've had both teams. So if you had a vote, you'd take Utah. But if they were playing on a neutral field and you had $10 to put on who was going to win the game, who would you take?
I think I would take Utah. Okay. Of Utah, Oklahoma? Yeah, I think I would. I think Oklahoma's defense is very, very average. They're very thin. They're very small. I think actually Utah Huntley's run game, Zach Moss's run game, their physicality would, you know, score 25 to 35 points on them. And then Utah's got the kind of defense to play man-to-man, to load the box up. They're unbelievably physical. They would get after that, I think, that O-line and really burden Jaden. I think it'd be a tremendous matchup, a tremendous game. But if I had to bet with my own money out of my pocket, Yeah, I think I would take the Utes in that matchup.
Brock Huard, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Chris Peterson joins a club now of Bob Stoops and Urban Meyer as guys who walked away from some seriously high-profile coaching gigs. Maybe not Peterson as much as the other two, but certainly close. In their mid-50s. Bob Stoops has not sniffed a return. Urban Meyer, it's been rumored, but with the story now that Clay Helton looks like he's going to stay put at USC, maybe Urban Meyer remains out of the game. I don't know for sure. What do you think led to Peterson's retirement, and do you think he'll resurface at some point in the next year or two?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to resurface at the Power 5 level anytime soon. I really don't. I think that over the last few years, you know, this is what I had said here publicly, that he was not going to leave for another job, that he was going to leave because he was just kind of done with the state of where college football is. And, you know, I think he just fits so beautifully in Boise, his personality, his demeanor. I had a coach tell me this year, a former coach, that knows Chris very well. And he said, you know, Chris never desired to be a head coach. That was just not in his makeup on his climb up. He was, you know, he didn't have the ego. He didn't climb over people's backs. You know, it wasn't something that it was just his burning desire in this ego to be this big time head coach. And thus he was in Boise for like 14 years, growing and developing and taking 2- and 3-star prospects, not worrying about the transfer portal, not worrying about all the stuff that comes with big time football. And as you're trying to take your program from where he built it at Washington, and that was great, and trying to take it to elite and be able to beat Alabama and beat Ohio State and beat Penn State and beat those teams, you know, you're living in the 4- and 5-star world. You're living in that transfer portal. You're just living in places that I just don't think fit his personality. We're in constant conflict, and you could feel that tension with him over the last couple years. So while that news was a bit, you know, I think startling and shocking to many, it didn't blow me away. Maybe a year or two sooner than I thought it would. But, yeah, that didn't, in the end, really surprise me all that much. And I think similar to the Oklahoma situation with Jimmy Lake is you have a guy that was destined for this, that's built for this, that I think has an enormous advantage jumping right into his first head coaching job with so much background and knowing just the very kind of essence and DNA of the program. I think it should be fairly seamless.
Let's talk about the Seahawks. They were able to tie San Francisco, and now they have the division lead because of San Francisco didn't play for a tie when they played Seattle. But just give me your thoughts on these final few weeks of the season. I mean, this is going to be one hell of a race between the 49ers and the Seahawks.
It's crazy, Gambo. I mean, it is like, and I remember, you know, all the fun debates we would have and like 2012 and 13 and 14 when the Seahawks were bullies and they were just dominant, right? You just felt, from our perspective, super confident. And then obviously you guys went on your role there with Carson and crew and kind of Bruce's confidence and swag and handled business up in Seattle a bunch of times. This was a team I thought this year that would be a 9 or 10 win team, that just kind of on their roster and where they were at and some of their turnovers. Over, you know, they're really built for the next few years. They've got $60 million in cap space after this season. They're going to have 10 draft picks, a couple first rounders, a bunch of third rounders. Like they're built, you know, to really kind of build this thing, I think, over the next few years. And this to me is just all an incredible bonus. Every game is tight. The next 4 weeks, every game could be competitive. When the Cardinals come up here, it will look nothing like the bludgeoning they just took from the Rams. Sunday night will be down to the wire, even in Carolina. I mean, this team is not equipped and built to be dominant and run away from anybody, but I will tell you what they are equipped and built to do: find ways to win and believe they can win. And not only in their locker room, guys, I think what's happened, as much as I've watched it this year, is the teams they're playing, I think, are starting to believe, like, oh, man, yeah, not again. Not another close game with these guys again. And that number 3 that's just going to wiggle his way out of some madness and find a way to win. And you know, to me, that is what this remarkable season's been all about.
I know you're super busy with all your college football stuff, and I haven't expected that you would have watched every single Kyler Murray performance. But of what you've seen, and I know he had a big-time clunker last week against the Rams, what have you seen so far out of the first-year quarterback for the Cardinals?
Yeah, other than last weekend, it's been an upward trajectory. And that game against San Francisco, that elite defense, to me, that was huge. And that's why last weekend was so shocking, unless maybe they felt like, yeah, look at us. You know, we are pretty good. We did go toe-to-toe, and we're down to a zero blitz against, you know, San Francisco from that game, you know, being their game. So maybe that was some of that immaturity, because last week was, that was just wholly unexpected. I would have never imagined it could look that way. But I think on the whole and in total, Kyler has shown that he not only belongs in this league, I think he's got an opportunity to thrive. I know in talking to some of the Seahawks guys, even after that game and people around that program, they know what they're in for the years to come. And that's going to be a very, very difficult battle with that guy as he grows, as he matures. There's a bunch of Russell Wilson I remember from his rookie year. When I look at Kyler, I see the same kind of growing pains, and Kyler did not have the team that Russell did in 2012 with a defense and an O-line and a run game to offset it. It's all his show. But if I was an Arizona Cardinal fan and in your guys' seats, I think this year has been an incredibly positive ride.
Good stuff, Brock. We really, really appreciate it. Thanks for the time, as always. Maybe we'll catch up with you again when we get a little closer to the Cardinal-Seahawks game, if you're available. We'd love to have you.
Let's do it.
All right.
Yeah, let's do it, boys, and have a great Christmas and New Year to come. But we'll talk to you in a few weeks.
You too, Brock. Thanks. Brock Huer joining us, Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. I was starting to question why we have Brock on the show with all those things he said about the Seahawks. And then right there at the end, he makes nice by saying good things about Kyler Murray. Right? I'm like, seriously, quit rubbing it in about Seattle and all the draft picks and the cap space and the blah, blah, blah. And then he makes nice with what he says about Kyler. I'm like, all right, fine. We'll have you on in a few weeks.
10 wins Seattle. Every year, 10 wins.
The future of the Cardinals general manager job boils down to three different options. Which one should Michael Bidwell pick? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Much ever since that Rams debacle on Sunday, there's been a steady, consistent conversation about Steve Keim, whether he will remain as general manager of this franchise when this season is up. I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows at this point outside of Michael Bidwell, but I do like something you said yesterday towards the end of our show. This isn't week three. This isn't week four. This isn't week eight. This isn't week nine.
We're in December.
We're three quarters of the way through this season. There are four games remaining. I have to imagine Michael Bidwell has, at the very least, a lean one way or another. Yes, he's coming back. No, I think I want to go in a different direction. A decision? Maybe not a decision, but a lean? I'd be shocked if with four games to go, there wasn't a lean about what he wanted to do about Steve Keim.
You
if
know,
anything.
Before the Rams game. I mean, because, and here's the thing. This is why I think you got to be getting very, very close if you're Michael. Before the Rams game, even with the losing, you felt good about the way they played. You felt that they were going in the right direction. Then the Rams debacle came, and it was like such a setback that he might be waiting to see how they respond.
Yeah.
How do you respond against the Pittsburgh Steelers? I need to see. We just got our asses kicked. Haven't got their asses kicked a whole lot this year. Only been one or two games where, you know, you really felt like they weren't competitive. And this was clearly one of them, down 34-0. So maybe he wants to see how they respond. And at that point, I don't think you need the final game of the season. Less than 4 weeks from now, the season's over. Less than 4 weeks. So I don't think you need all of these games if you're Michael to make a determination on what you're going to do. But I do think you may want to see how they respond to what was clearly the worst loss of the season, where they failed to show up to play.
That's a fair point. Even something Brock Huard, our guest that we just had on a moment ago from Seattle, he fully expects a better, more energized Cardinals team when they play Seattle in a couple of weeks up there in Seattle than what they saw. Because Seattle knows better. Seattle knows the Arizona Cardinals are better than what they showed and better than how they played against the Rams. But yeah, how do they respond to that? Our friends over at Revenge of the Birds, which is a, I believe, SB Nation affiliated website, but there's a lot of good content there with the Arizona Cardinals. Them, cardswired.com, a lot of good stuff out there. Blake Allen Murphy is one of their writers. He wrote a piece today on the three options with the Cardinals general manager position, three doors. He basically compared it to, like, let's make a deal, right? Here are three doors that Michael Bidwell could choose to open as the owner of the Arizona Cardinals. Behind door number one is to just keep Keim. And in Blake Allen Murphy's piece, he said, look, this might not be as bad as everybody thinks, all right? I don't think it's as bad or would sink the Cardinals as many think it could do. And he pointed out some of the good things Keim has done and all the money he's got to spend and all the decisions that he could make that potentially could be good. It's just that there are so many holes to fill for this team. Door number two, promote from within. Adrian Wilson, Quentin Harris, one of those two guys. Quentin Harris, 12 years experience. He is the number two guy in that organization in terms of football decision-making behind Steve Keim. He's the player personnel director. He's regarded highly around the league. And, of course, Adrian Wilson, we all know Adrian Wilson's story, and that might be a very popular pick among the fan base, certainly, given A-Dub's popularity with the fans.
The only thing with A-Dub is that he has been, you know, one of Steve's confidants, right-hand guys.
And
I think it'd be hard for A-Dub to take the job. And I also think that, you know, that A-Dub has been a part of the decisions that have been made.
And that's exactly what was pointed out in the piece, that the problem with staying in-house is that you might ultimately get a Steve Keim clone. You might get somebody who was...
Learned from Steve,
who was around Steve so much that would basically, in essence, make the same decisions that Steve would have made. So why would you do that? Why would you hire somebody who would basically make the same decisions?
So...
Go ahead.
So number one is stay with Steve.
Yeah.
Stay with Steve Keim. It might not be as bad as everybody thinks. Number two is hire from within.
Yeah.
And they mentioned two guys. Number three is obviously go outside the organization.
Go outside the organization.
And bring in somebody else. But as you pointed out, the most difficult part about going outside the organization and bringing in somebody else is they've got to align with the philosophy of a Cliff and Kyler match.
Yep.
And that's very, you know, and how many GMs out there are going to come in. Your quarterback and your coach are set in that direction. Like, you have no real say in that. Like, you have to agree to that philosophy.
Yes.
That the coach, you're not going to turn it over to Cliff and let Cliff make all the decisions. Oh. I mean, he's just getting his feet wet right now. But you would have to get somebody, if you did go outside the organization and you didn't retain Steve, that you would get somebody that would have to be in line with the way Cliff is thinking.
No doubt.
And that's going to be difficult to do.
That is. It's going to have to be somebody who wants to work with Cliff, who wants to work with Kyler, who looks at them and says, yes, that is. Do you see what David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, said when he was asked about his next head coach?
No.
He wants somebody with an offensive mind. He like a lot of owners, sensing that's the now that trend hasn't always worked out for everybody this year in the NFL with some of the hirings we've seen. But he specifically said, I want an offensive-minded head coach because that is the direction of this league.
The vision of putting Cliff and Kyler together, which I think we all agree that it's been good. I wouldn't say great, but it's certainly not bad. It's good. Murray's having a good rookie season. Kingsbury's done a good job. Nobody's making fun of Kingsbury anymore like they were before the season started. That vision was put together by Keim. So he put that vision together. So, you know, you've got Steve's vision of what they want to do offensively with Cliff and Kyler, and it looks good. The problem for Steve simply is that these defensive players that you've brought in, a lot of them just haven't worked out.
Yeah.
Now, some bad luck with Alford and Filon and Kamdichi and things like that, I understand. But some of these draft picks, so that's where the... You know, that's the hard part for Steve, is that there's been just a lot of defensive players that have led to this is the worst defense in the NFL. It's terrible.
Yeah.
That's the negative.
Names were mentioned, suggestions. Ed Dodds of the Colts, Alonzo Highsmith, Elliot Wolf, who is related to Ron Wolf, used to run the Packers all those years. They work for the Browns. Will McClay, Nick Cassero. A couple of interesting media names. And we saw this with Mike Mayock joining the Raiders, I should say. NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah and ESPN's Lewis Riddick. Lewis Riddick was a guest on the Doug and Wolf show on October 3rd of this past year. And he was asked about a new GM in Arizona accepting the air raid offense. Here's what he said.
I mean, there would be some who simply because of the fact that they want to be a general manager. Now, there'd be some who would say yes to get the job, and then once they got in the door, would be trying to enact change as quickly as possible. There are some that would say yes, would come in and say, hey, there's enough components of the air raid already in the NFL that is, you know, resulting in success. Now, obviously, you have to combine it with a little bit more, I don't want to say traditional football, but a little bit more of a complementary approach, meaning you can't just line up four wides, five wides empty all the time and sacrifice your quarterback and, you know, in terms of protection and just act like you're in the Big 12. You can't do that either. So it's kind of, you know, it has to be a little bit of give and take.
Okay, that interview's almost, it's 2 months old. That's already happened here. what he's talking about. They're not running.
They're not running four wideouts all the time.
They're not. They're not. I mean, that,
no,
that,
but a GM. But here's the thing. There has to be a little bit of give and take. No GM's going to be in. If I'm coming in here, it's because you're hiring me because you think that I'm the guy that can get this going. So you believe in me. So it has to be like I have to have a say in what's going to go on here. I have to have a say in how he's going to run his offense. I have to have a say in, you know, the personnel that he's going to use. So that's what he just said there. It has to be a little bit of give and take.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, okay, I'll do it the way. I'll just come in and I'll fix your defense, and I'm not even going to touch the offense. Who do you want, Cliff? What do you want? Oh, I need to, okay, I'll go get that for you. I don't know that you're going to get. See, that's the thing that Michael's got to debate, too. With Keim, you've got a working relationship. And I heard, I think Bickley said this earlier. I thought it was fascinating. Keim's the one who went out of his way and hired a coach who had been fired at his alma mater, mm-hmm. right? Does Kingsbury almost owe it to Keim to come out there and kick some steel or ass this week after the debacle last week? Bickley brought that up. I thought it was an interesting point.
Yeah, I think Cliff Kingsbury, I think the Cardinals organization owes it to a lot of people to go
sure.
out and kick some Steelers'
sure.
ass this weekend.
But if you are Cliff, you don't want a different GM.
Yeah, no. After last night's win, the Coyotes now just 1 point out of first place. Do they have the roster to keep this pace for the rest of the season? We'll ask Captain Shane Doan. He'll have that question next here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Doan scores on the rebound!
Shane Doan.
Shane Doan got a piece of it. I think this goal is going to go to the captain.
Captain Coyote.
Shane Doan sends a one-hopper on net. He scores! The captain.
The Coyotes' all-time career points leader joins Burns and Gambo.
Now. Shot by Shane Doan. He scores!
Our weekly visit with our good friend, the former Coyote great, former captain of the Coyotes, Shane Doan, here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Good afternoon, Shane. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving with the family.
I did, Burnsy. Thanks so much.
Did you bring back any Canadian candy for us?
I do have some for you guys.
Oh, I'm excited for Burnsy to try yes. it.
Really?
Yes.
I'm excited.
Yes.
Boy.
Yep. Well, you should be because it's really good.
I know. You brought me Canadian candy before.
I know.
You have.
But,
it's
but
very
it
good.
It kind of melted. Didn't I bring it in the summer one
you
time?
You did. You brought me. Some of it was. Not all of it.
Wow. Not exactly my smartest move.
Yeah.
I was trying to get it to you. I was trying. I was working hard trying to get it to you guys.
Donor got me Canadian candy a couple of times. Yeah. And one time it was a little bit melted.
I can't wait to try it. You know, with that admission, you know what that got you out of? That got you out of. I don't even want to bring it up. I don't even want to mention it. But now
our 2-game winning streak to end the season.
You are in a rip free zone when it comes to your fantasy football team here in our host league at Arizona Sports.
You're that team that was out of it early, but they still fought hard. They didn't quit on their coach, even though they had nothing to play for. They still won some games at the end of the season. You know, so I'll give you credit for that. I mean, you could have just packed it in and ended it on an 8-game losing streak, but you were able to win, 2 games at the end of the season and just play hard. So I'll give you a little credit.
I've never been in this situation in fantasy, like sports ever. And I'd always get mad at the guys that are like, once they're eliminated, they stop even adjusting their roster or doing anything. And it's been so hard to keep adjusting my roster to make sure that I don't have 4 guys on bye weeks or anything. I'm like, oh, I just, who cares?
Yeah, I know.
But I get so mad at those guys when they do it. So now I'm like, I can't do it. I can't do that.
Plus, you're retired. What are you doing? I mean, you got all the time in the world.
You're right.
You work,
you're
like,
right.
You work like 4 days a month.
We expect your support here on the Burns and Gambo Show because the Final Four is set. And I have made the Final Four. Our producer, Jordan Bird, has made the Final Four. And Bickley and Murata have each made the Final Four as well. So
it's a battle of the afternoon. Yeah. What happened to the morning guys? They didn't show up. It's too early.
They were drafting from the same cheat sheet that Shane Doan was, apparently.
I was looking at their computers.
That's what you get for sitting down at that end of the table. You're sitting down at my end of the table, and you're in the Final Four, Shane, but you're down there with Doug and Wolf hanging out with the morning guys, and you got this loser team now.
That's what happens.
Well, the Coyotes got a nice win last night against Columbus, and they kind of it's been a weird couple of weeks for the Coyotes. The losses have started to creep in a little bit, but all of those shootout moments, it has been a lot of nip and a lot of tuck for the Coyotes the last few weeks.
It really has, and I mean, their goaltending has been amazing.
Unreal. And unreal.
I mean, you don't want to go to the well too many times because, you know, something goes wrong and all of a sudden it's hard to get out of that funk. But they keep getting points, and points, hey, they count the same in November and December as they do in, you know, in April. And it's so important to be getting these points and banking them and giving yourself a legitimate shot at, you know, being one of the teams to be there in the end.
Yeah, you know, we talk about some of the players that have really stood out. Garland's been fantastic for them. I mean, has he surprised you at all with his play?
Well, last year when he had his run, he had a run there for about 20 games where he was really, really good. And then he kind of, the energy kind of died and he kind of lost out a little bit. But he started this year with that same energy. And if he can, if that can be his trademark, if that can be what he goes back to, then you can see him being effective for a long time. And I guess now it's going to, you're going to see how they, you're going to see how he responds to that little run's done and see if he can respond and get back amped up again. Cause he hasn't been the same player in the last couple games as he was for about 10, 15 game stretch there where, I mean, he's just, he just works so hard and it's so fun to watch. I'm a big fan of him.
One of the things that I'm excited to see Kessel with his return. I think that's on Friday night. But Kessel has been a big disappointment. He's only got four goals and he's a minus 14. And he's when you were 32, do things just start to slip a little bit? I mean, what are you seeing? Is it struggle adjusting to a new team? What are you seeing with Kessel's struggles on this team so far?
Well, I think he's actually had some. He's been in grade A scoring chances a few times where I would say he's probably about four goals behind where I think where he legitimately easily could be. And that would put him right around nine. And I could see him going on a streak where he gets, you know, eight goals in the next seven games and he's kind of back into where he should be because he's that type of player. It's the initial getting here and people looking at his totals and at the end of the year, is he going to be close to those totals? I think it's too early to make a judgment on that.
Yeah, but he's not playing with Malkin, with Crosby and Malkin on that power play, though, right? I mean, doesn't that take a lot away?
Oh, no, yeah.
That's a big deal.
Huge deal. And it's going to – like, I don't think anyone thought he was going to come here and put up 82 points again. I was hoping that he comes in and puts up 55, 65, at the, you know, right in that number, and is something that – can be something that he would be happy with because he would be adding a lot to the team.
He's projected for 42.
Yeah, he's only a hot streak away from being on pace for, you know, he's the type of guy that could get you 15 points in the next nine games, and then all of a sudden he's back on pace again. He's never going to be the guy that I think, well, he's never. It's going to be hard for him to be the guy for 82 games that we wanted him to be from like 4 years ago when he was, you know, in the cup finals. He was, honestly, he should have been the Conn Smythe Trophy winner maybe that one year. He was so good for them. But at 32, it's hard to get up for every game too. It's hard to get up, and his team's winning, and so the pressure isn't that bad. He's finding ways to contribute once in a while. You want more because you want to kind of get away from being, like you said, that nip and tuck.
Taylor Hall is available. Is this a player the Coyotes should go after? Is he a player that can help this team, and should Chyka make a move?
Well, you only go after him if you can get him for a long-term contract. You don't even think about it if you're going after him to, you know, without the contract already signed. I don't even think you cross that. You don't even look at him unless he says, "Yeah, I'll sign with you guys, and this is what I'm asking for, and this is what something that the team is then capable of doing." The hardest thing is when you haven't been in the playoffs is understand, like, it's dangerous when you start making trades to get into the playoffs because you need to have a core that is capable of getting you there before you start trying to add pieces to get there, in my mind. And again, I'm probably different than others, but I think you got to build your core up to get you there. And then if you want to add a piece like that, then you go and add a piece like that once you believe that everything's set and you're comfortable with everything else around you.
But I think you have to be in the playoffs for a year before you go and look at somebody like adding someone like Taylor Hall.
All right, good stuff, Donor. We appreciate the time, as always. Looking forward to the Canadian chocolate. Just find a reason to drive by the station. And
all right.
Because I at this point, I'll take chocolate from Antarctica. I'll take chocolate from anywhere.
I brought you
world.
Chocolate from Finland.
You did. I want to try chocolates of the world, so bring me Canadian chocolate
go.
So I can try it, okay?
Hey, and I'm going to Switzerland, so I'll bring you guys home with chocolate, too.
I was there 2 years ago. That chocolate's amazing. Amazing.
That's where everything comes from.
Oh, what part are you going to?
To Davos.
Okay.
We're going to Davos. Did you know Davos is the home of like the economic summit for the top 20 economies in the world?
There's only one person on the Burns and Gambo team shaking their head yes, and that's Sarah Cazell. Everyone else is just like, what the hell is Shane even talking about?
I know, I spent New
Sarah's
Year's
like,
Eve.
Oh yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
I spent New Year's Eve in Zurich. That's all I know, and it was cool.
It is cool, and it's beautiful.
It is
amazing. It's amazing.
Good stuff, Donor. Well, thank you for the chocolate. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
All right. Sounds good, guys. Thanks. Yeah.
Shane Doan joining us, Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and
Switzerland.
Infiniti. The Air Force Reserve Jerry Colangelo Classic presented by Citi is back at Talking Stick Resort Arena this Sunday, December 8th. This year, the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame is bringing you a triple header of matchups featuring Tulane versus St. Louis, St. Mary's versus Dayton, and Liberty versus GCU. Arizona Sports giving you an exclusive $9.87 ticket offer. Head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for more details. Steelers coming to town this weekend with the benefit of pulling off the best trade in the NFL this season. And it makes us wonder, could the Cardinals have done the same thing? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. If you're going to Sunday's game against the Pittsburgh Steelers,
I am.
So am I. The Arizona Cardinals, consider yourself warned. There'll be a lot of Steeler fans there. A lot of Steeler fans.
Really?
Oh, yeah. These next 2 weeks, it's going to be, yes. A lot of
Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Like, that's not a spot that I would think a lot of people move here from Pittsburgh.
No, I think there's a lot of Pennsylvania transplants who live here. There's probably a lot of people from Pittsburgh who circled this as, like,
team.
A vacation weekend. Yeah.
That's what I was about to say. Gambo hit on it. They're like the Cowboys or the Patriots. Even if you have no affiliation to them whatsoever, they were good, so I like them now.
Yeah. I think the next 2 weeks, the Steelers and then the Browns. Even though the Browns are no good, people from Ohio have moved here. We've got one on our radio station, for goodness sakes, Doug Franz. I don't even know if he's a Browns fan. He's not. He's a Redskins fan. But yeah, the next two weeks, there's going to be a lot of opposing teams, a lot of opposing teams' fans in the stands. The Steelers are a team with everything on the line. They're playing for everything over these last 4 weeks.
No question.
They are fighting for the last playoff spot in the AFC. They are tooth and nail with the Tennessee Titans right now. I think they've got a better conference record. So that's why they've got the tiebreaker as it stands right now. We already know they're going to go with Duck Hodges at quarterback. Devlin Duck Hodges is going to get the start for him. But it's the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade that kind of caught your attention today. And for good reason, because it's pretty easy to make the case that was the best trade in the NFL this
year. There's a story in the New York Times, and it said the best trade of the NFL season was Minkah Fitzpatrick. Miami had taken him 16 months ago. I mean, Miami had taken him number one overall. That was in September, 16 months from September. Then he requested a trade, wasn't happy with his role in Miami, wasn't happy with the coaching staff. So he requested a trade, and they sent him to Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh gave up a lot to get him, right? A first rounder and a fifth rounder. But he has been steady and fantastic for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're 7-5. They're in a chase for a playoff spot. They've won 7 of their last 10 games, 6 of the last 7, and he's been a key reason why. I mean, he's got 8 of the team's league-leading 28 takeaways. He's got 5 picks and 2 fumble recoveries and a forced fumble. He scored 2 touchdowns, and he's just been fantastic for him. I mean, just all the way around, he's done everything that they've asked him to do and then some. So that deal for Minkah Fitzpatrick at the time, be like, oh my goodness, Miami's unloading everybody, but the Steelers, that is a great trade for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
It's been a great trade for them.
It has been, and they've ridden that, given all of their, I mean, look at offensively what they're missing right now with all the injuries with Juju and with James Conner.
Now, they're both questionable, right?
And they're both questionable for the game. Don't know if either one of them are going to play, right? I mean, Sarah, I know you saw the most recent injury report. Are they both being listed as questionable for the game? I'm just seeing it right now. Well, they're not. There's no official designation yet, but I can tell you today that James Conner was limited in practice, and Juju Smith-Schuster did not practice today at all. So it's going to be tough. I saw the Cardinals; they're only 2.5-point underdogs at home, which I was. I was a little surprised by that. But
well, coming off of the beating that they took and how well Pittsburgh's been, I thought it would have been higher. But I don't think there's a lot of belief in Duck Hodges,
yeah,
you know, and his play. And I think, again, I think people look at that game with the Cardinals and think that's an outlier. They're better than that. They've proven it all year they've been better than
that. It does give rise to an interesting question. Should the Arizona Cardinals have made a similar Minka Fitzpatrick type move?
Well, the one that the fans were questioning and wanted was Jalen Ramsey. I mean, that was the one where a lot of people were like, you know, are they going to go after Jalen Ramsey? But the price tag was really high. And I was telling everybody it's two first, before it was even done, I was telling everybody the price tag's two first round picks. Like they want two first round picks for Jalen Ramsey. I don't know if they're going to get it because no cornerback has ever gone for two first round picks. But that was, you know, that was the price tag, and that's what it ended up being. It's a fair question. I mean, if they would have got Jalen Ramsey, how much better would they be, especially with Patrick Peterson having struggled? I'm happy that they didn't give up two first-round draft picks because their draft pick this year, and we talked about this, it's number seven now, but it could go up to as high as number three in all likelihood.
Sure, if you look at the upside-down standings, there are a whole bunch of teams crammed in there with three wins, and the Cardinals are one of them. As the way the tiebreakers work out and the tie that the Cardinals had at the beginning of the season, they're currently picking seventh, but it's a whole bunch of teams with three wins. I'm glad they didn't. I think that they're what's been revealed over the first 12 games of the season is that the Arizona Cardinals cannot afford to be giving away first-round picks for one guy. They're not one guy away, all right? Now, it's benefited the Steelers greatly, obviously. But the Steelers just didn't have as many holes on defense as the Cardinals do, right? That the Steelers were better equipped to be one great player away on their defense from being a much better defense. Cardinals had way too many weak spots, way too many weak links in the chain, and not enough girth to be able to withstand trading two first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey for one player. That defense is not one player away from being great. They're just not.
No, we thought they were one player away with Patrick, just from being respectable with Patrick Peterson, and that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
On September 17th, I tweeted this out. Let's address the Jalen Ramsey questions. I'm certain the Cards will look into a possible trade, but the Jags aren't taking back Patrick Peterson, and I don't see the Cardinals giving up multiple first-rounders and mortgaging the future when the plan is to build around Kyler Murray. That was on September 17th. That's what I tweeted out. And that was the thing at the time. I was being told that they wanted multiple first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey. They ended up getting it. But if you're the Cardinals right now and you could have the, you know, I don't know that he makes them that much better. Maybe, you know, it's still a top 10 pick, right? I mean, he's a good player, but has he elevated the Rams to, like, greatness?
No.
No?
No. He's very good.
Very good.
He's very, very, I think the Steelers, I'll be honest with you, I think they caught lightning in a bottle with Fitzpatrick. Yeah, I think that they, for every one of those that worked out real well, there's probably five that didn't work out at all. And not that Jalen Ramsey hasn't worked out, but he certainly hasn't worked out like Fitzpatrick has. He certainly hasn't worked out to that level of success. So I'm glad the Cardinals didn't do it. They need all the first round picks they can get. The question is, do we trust the guy who's going to be executing the number one pick? Who is going to be the guy executing the first round draft pick for the Arizona Cardinals? That I don't know. You can have all the first round picks in the world, but if the guy making those selections picking a bunch of Hassan Reddick type players, then what good does it do you?
No, you got to do better. I mean, there's no question. You also think about the Patrick Peterson deal. If they could have got a first rounder for him at that time,
yeah, that's,
and they'd have a first rounder right now. Now again, me and you both said they got to keep him.
I know,
but you know, we like right now. Who would have thought that he would play this poorly?
That is the haunting hindsight conversation. Should they have moved Patrick?
Because now you'd have two first round draft picks.
Yeah, I know. I think about that one a lot. I think about that one a lot.
I would have known it was going to be that bad.
Kyler Murray has been sacked 41 times so far this season. Who's responsible for that? You might be surprised by the answer, or you might not. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.